Good afternoon, Jamie.
How is it going, Keith Tronics?
It is going pretty well, actually. Yeah, things are going all right in the Thompson household.
You have a baby?
Not yet. Due date is Tuesday. Currently, the wife is still pregnant. So we're kind of just waiting patiently at this moment.
As in like 3 days from or 4 days from now?
Yes, yes. So just a few more days till the due date, but we're not going to induce her on her due date or anything. So unless she goes like 2 or 3 weeks overdue, we're just kind of in a holding pattern waiting.
Come on, nature.
Yep, exactly. Right. The first time around, it was week 20, we were like, let's not have this baby, nature. How about you just shh for a little bit for like 20-ish weeks, right, and then we'll be good. And this time around, we're like, all right, come on, chop, chop. Let's get this thing over with.
Now it's going to be overbaked. Going to be overbaked before we are. Yeah. So that's exciting, man.
Yeah. Very exciting. Very exciting.
Last podcast before your child to parent ratio is even.
Yeah. Once we have that 1-to-1 ratio, things are all changing. I have a lot of paternity leave, thankfully. So I'll be, able
What's
to spend,
a lot?
12 weeks.
12 weeks. Nice.
So yeah, I have lots of paternity leave. So I'll get to spend a lot of quality time with the little boy and, with Eden, which she'll be really happy about. I'm very excited.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Exciting. So now I'm just trying to, you know, it's a month plus after when I promised you I would have Juniper's lab released. So now I'm over here just like continuing to try to release it sort of publicly as a thing, but I wanted to finish off a couple new features, which we'll get into obviously, but, yeah. How are things going for you?
Yeah. Let's just stay on your side.
Okay.
So how was your, last time we recorded was like a month ago. So
it was a while back. Yeah. So it's been good. So I kind of soft launched, right? I got some people like give them access or whatever, which I don't think they've really been kicking the tires or anything. So I haven't even got that much feedback, but there were a couple key features that I really wanted to do. One was the great image optimization project, which was, I don't want this application to murder somebody's like data cap or bandwidth usage if they're just like searching through. And the images that I was using for all the cards were like 600 kilobytes a piece. Mm-hmm. And I only had one big image basically. And so I was just doing the good old max width trick to get it to be the right size for each thing that I was doing. And I was like, this isn't really efficient. I need to go through the process of resizing things and getting things into a better, more performant size, basically, both because it'll make the application faster and because it will lower the usage for my end users. So did that, which it was a really interesting project. I ended up kind of taking Screen Shooter, and since it already has access to Image Magic, I was like, all right, we'll just make like an image optimization pipeline built into this thing. So I did that. And now I had to run it on the server for like a day and a half to actually go through and process everything. Cause there's like 13,000 cards that I have images for. And I wanted to do this the best way I could. And the ways I display the cards are in searching. There's like a medium sized version. When you build a deck list, there's like a thumbnail sized version of the card. And then when you go and view the details, there's like a larger version of the card. So I was like, all right, well, cool. What's the like best image practices for these things? And that led me down using a picture element and generating WebP for everything.
Good old WebP.
I have the 1x and 2x version, so it handles things better on Retina. And I went through and I did that, generated, 36,000-ish images or whatever.
Screen Shooter doing work.
But then I realized that Safari sucks and doesn't handle WebP. So
wait, what?
Yeah, Safari can't handle WebP unless it's on Big Sur or whatever. And I think it like has like bad, barely handles it kind of on mobile. So I also support JPEG 2000 or JP2. So I had to generate the Retina, the standard, the like for thumbnails, et cetera, et cetera. So I ended up putting 150 some odd thousand images into my CDN that I generated over the course of like 2 days.
So far sounds really efficient so far.
Yeah, it's an insane. Well, okay, so get this though. Each image before was like 600 kilobytes, right? My big version now is like 40 kilobytes for a card.
Wow.
The search version is 15 kilobytes, and the thumbnail version is 1.5 kilobytes per card. So the like performance gains were absolutely astronomical.
So you have only three versions of each image, or do you have like
six or nine
versions?
There are 12 versions for each. Because there's a 1x and 2x WebP and a 1x 2x JP2 for each size of the same card. Mm-hmm. And there are three sizes. Mm-hmm. So they're 4 times 3.
Cool. So you built a paperclip.
Carrier wave. Yeah. Ish. Yeah, right. Well, this is where we get into some fun times with Oban too. So I screwed something up when I deployed Screen Shooter, and when I had my production server of, because Screen Shooter's database-less, it still doesn't handle databases. It didn't do the processing. It would just do it one at a time, right? It would go, you would send it the URL for an image. It would grab the image, process it the way, and send you back the new version. So that's just how it works. So the way I was doing the job stuff was all from within Juniper's lab. It would go and queue up thousands and thousands of jobs and go do this thing. Well, when I deployed my modified version of Image Magic that could support new versions or whatever, I actually screwed something up. And so it was returning a 500 error, which means that every single Oban job was getting an exception, which it was sending to Rollbar. It's processing thousands and thousands of these things. Literally, there's no way to just turn Oban off. I dropped the table. I stopped the actual Oban queue process using like their API for it or whatever. Like just like I jumped into the remote console and was like, Oban, seriously, stop this. And it just did not give a crap about what I was telling it to do. So it just kept on trucking.
That'd be cool if that was the actual function name. Seriously, stop this.
Seriously, stop this. And so, yeah, I could not stop it from trying to process like, so it was like a race against the clock. I was like, well, I'm going to totally fill up my entire roll bar exception notification limit, which I did very quickly. And or I'm going to, you know, like fix this problem and get a fix for it deployed before it fills up that problem. Spoiler, did not do it fast enough to prevent it from hitting the limit.
That's crazy.
So, was pretty fun.
So you literally can't stop Oban, or like you just processing too fast?
If you can, I don't know what it is, because I dropped the Oban jobs table multiple times inside of my production database. Like I literally went in there and just was like, truncate this table, just delete every single job that is in queued.
It's already got it in memory.
Something, yeah. Oban did not care. So it would just be like, nope, no, that's fine. I'll requeue it. It's fine. And it would queue itself back up. So yeah, that was great. I went into Oban's thing, and there's a thing to literally pause queue, stop queue, whatever. I was like, stop queue default, which was the queue that I put it on. And it was just like, it gives you the solid okay. And then you check the status of the queue, and the status, like there is no queue with that name. So you're good, man. Except for it, I look at my notifications in the background, and it's just like brrr, just churning through these things. So I'm like, Oban, I have no idea how you work, dude, but you're a... function names are ill named if the stop queue does not actually stop the queue. So yeah, that was a real big bummer, but it, you know, was kind of comical. So I think I'm only on the free plan of RoboWire, and I was like, I'm not going to pay to upgrade to like the 6,000 or whatever.
You just can't have any more exceptions this month.
Well, until the 19th or whatever, which is like next Friday.
There you go.
So I was like, I've got other stuff to work on anyway. So that brings us to feature number two that I needed to work on, which was pulling in pricing information, which I had an old branch that I was working on. So I kind of resurrected that.
Wait, what do you mean pulling in? For the cards. Yeah.
Yep. Card pricing information and all that stuff. So I went down the route of like resurrecting this old branch, being like, dude, this sucks, man. Because there were so many edge cases. I was trying to line things up based on like name of the card. Well, it turns out people don't actually agree on what the names of the cards are, which is mind boggling to me. And so I went a ways with that, and I was like, well, hey, look at that. I managed to get half of them to actually sync up properly between my database and what TCG Player has. But then I go and I poke around in their documentation a little bit more, and realized that I'm like, oh, there's this other option that's like, it's basically, it can't document everything that's going to be returned because it's dynamic, because TCG Player supports a bunch of different types of games. And so it didn't have all the information. Like, I couldn't read in the documentation what I was going to get back, basically. And so I had to go and like make up a curl request and throw it in, like go actually do it, pipe it into JQ and kind of look and see what came back. And then eventually I figure out like, oh, okay, I'm a moron. Like, I just need to flip the way that I'm doing this. And I actually do, if I dig into extra data on something, actually have the like identifier that I would use for a card. And so once I figured that out, I was able to like really easily sort of sync them up. So I have all the pricing information pulled in.
It's kind of crazy, like that the real ID is in a API called get extra.
Like get extended data is like the flag you have to send it. And it's like, oh, cool. Here's the identifier for the card. and because it's not their database ID for the card. It's like the official card number. And I'm like, but that's kind of a big deal. Like, that's like the thing I want, right? Like, I want to know, like, I'm looking for card 65 out of 240 or whatever. Yeah. So,
so now you have like the real identifier for.
Yes. Now I have that.
Like the name or whatever.
Mm-hmm. But then that led me to another problem that I kind of, I knew I was eventually going to come into contact with, but I wasn't sure when it was going to be a problem because I'm an idiot. And that is that. So when you're playing like a game like Pokemon or whatever, there's a, sometimes there are normal versions of the cards, which is just like the plain Jane card. You get the holofoil version of a card, which has the exact same card number, but the art is holographic. And then there's what's known as a reverse holographic card, which is the art is not holographic, but literally everything else on the card is. And so that
and
also
you get a free
has,
trip to Willy Wonka's.
Exactly. So that is the golden ticket. But so that means that each type of card can have different variations. And this actually gets even further. There can be like a promo card. You can get a promo card with a first edition of that promo card. You can get a staff version, which is only given out to like people who run tournaments and stuff like that. It has like a special version of the card that has staff like printed embossed kind of into it.
That's such a good idea.
There's them. All these variations, and those cards sell for a lot of money too. It's actually pretty sweet.
I would imagine, yeah.
But there's all these versions. They're versions of the cards for like, you got top 16 in a regional tournament. It's this version of the card, but it says top 16 on it, or like champion or whatever. There's like all sorts of versions of the cards. And I
second place.
Yeah, there's literally a second place card, I'm pretty sure. but
sells for a penny.
Oh, it still sells for a lot because you can fake like you won it or like came in second at like a, you know, 700 person tournament. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so there are all these versions. And the way an owned card in Juniper's lab worked was it just matched up a card in the database, which has, you know, represents a single ID and a person. It just matched those things up. I wasn't handling variations on cards.
Always make it many to many. Just do it all the time.
Well, so what I ended up doing is I took the owned card amount. And I have now owned card has counts on it instead of count. And it's just a JSON field that can handle the variations. So it'll be like, I own this many holographics, this many reverse holofoils, this many normals or whatever. And then I can work things off of that. But it's still just a one-to-one for each individual card ID. There's still an index on that. So I did that, but that requires that the UI change for how you go through and add things to your collection, because now it's like you can't just be like, I have one of these cards. It has to be like, depending on which card it is, how many variations there are, you need to see like a different contextually aware list based on the variations, because not everything has a holofoil or not everything has a reverse holofoil. So there's lots and lots going on there. So I'm actually in the process now that I have all that information and it's modeled out right, I'm in the process of tweaking the UI for adding and removing things from a collection so that it works out. And yeah, so that's where we're currently at. And
wow,
yeah, it's been a long journey. But also a competitor was released like 4 or 5 days ago for sort of, it's just like a deck builder competitor. They still don't do the collection management, which the more that I dig into this, the more that I see how much of a freaking nightmare it can kind of be. I go, this is actually the killer feature of the thing. It's just managing your collection. The deck builder thing I built for me and other like competitive people, but that's like the small portion of the actual community of Pokemon people. The collection manager is where the money is going to be made. So yeah, I was like, I'm not super mad, but it did tell me that like, okay, I need to knock this feature out so that when I launch, I can be like, and I've got this, which literally nobody else on the market does. And it's not super easy to build. So good luck.
How did you find out about this competitor?
Because somebody I follow on Twitter had tweeted out like a page, like a deck list from it. And I like clicked on the link to the like Twitter account for the application, and it had like 6 followers or something. And then I looked at the tweets and it was like, hey, we released 5 days ago or whatever. So that's how I figured out that it had come out. Mm. It kind of looks like crap, if I'm being honest. It does some things that are pretty cool, which I'll totally give it.
Should have used Tailwind.
Yeah, they should have used Tailwind. I think they used Bootstrap, honestly. It looks pretty bootstrappy. But yeah, I think Juniper's Labs design looks way better, which is obviously just like a slightly modified version of Tailwind's stock UI for most things.
All right. Indigo,
I guess it's progressively looks more and more different as I continue to move along with things. Right. But yeah. So that is where I'm at, though. I'm still currently in the process of kind of reworking the UI for adding and removing things from a collection. Once I get that finished, I'm going to add collection stats, which is just like an overarching, like when you view your collection, I want to tell like how many cards you have, how many rare or like how many holofoils, what, et cetera. Like, but just do a bunch of summation on things and give you, now that I have the market value for every variation of a card, that I do use a gen server to like periodically go and update, like every hour it goes and like updates all of the prices.
Cool. They change that much, or like, I mean,
they
like
can a, occasionally like something will happen
over there.
Yeah, like occasionally something will get announced and like you'll see there's just like a buyout of all of this kind of card on the market. And so the price like fluctuates like crazy. So that happens periodically. But in TCG Player's API doesn't seem to have a rate limit. So I can, and you can batch like a bunch of things. I can be like, hey, go give me these 250 products in a single batch, like single request. Mm. And then I can just like churn through that stuff on my own. So it doesn't, I mean, I only have to make like, at that point, like 20 requests or something to go, and oh, more than that. But yeah, make like less than 100 requests to get all of the cards out of the database.
That's cool. So what are your, like, who's using this? Can you remind me of like, who's like, do you have paid users of this?
No. So I basically didn't launch, right? It's technically you could sign up. I have not told a soul outside of this podcast and like a handful of people that play Pokemon here in Fort Wayne, basically, about it.
Well, the problem is you just unleashed the stand-up soldiers. So you're going to get a lot of signups.
A lot of Kevin signed up and poked around for a second. I did see that as one of my users. Nice. Thanks, Kevin. He didn't give me any feedback, which is probably like, hey, it's busted, dude. This thing doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, he's probably like, where's the collector? Where's the collector stuff?
Why can't I collect? Because you didn't give me any.
I've got 13 staff cards, dude.
Dude, all the staff.
I got another revenue stream you can do. I can't even say without laughing. You could do some NFTs.
Oh my god. Can we not talk about this? NFTs make me mad, dude. I
collect them all.
I dislike the blockchain with a passion because it's like,
what's wrong with the blockchain? Blockchain's
cool. Well, I mean, so blockchain in concept. Good. Blockchain and like Bitcoin's effect on the planet, not good.
Yes,
they're generally just, it's not a good idea to spend loads and loads of energy to make fake money that requires you to spend loads and loads of energy to exist. I have to imagine the amount of energy consumed on Bitcoin exceeds the market cap of Bitcoin. Right?
Do you think it's that bad? You think, well, it has to be, right? Because it takes like, somebody did the math. Yeah.
Besides the initial Bitcoin that was being mined, right? Mm-hmm. Like all of the constant mining. And since it gets harder and harder as things progress, it literally just makes it less valuable in the sense of like offset, you know, being carbon neutral or whatever. So like it's, infuriating to me. And NFTs are questionable too, because you're like, there's the funny thing of like somebody being like, here's your NFT. I also, by the way, I can make another one that's exactly the same thing. So there can be another original NFT that's the same thing.
So stupid.
So yeah.
Stupid. Well, so you're not gonna follow up on that revenue stream?
Yeah, I'm gonna avoid that one, like the plague. But also, I think Nintendo would come after me. But maybe not, who knows. So yeah, all right, that's my 20 minutes. How about your last month, I guess? How have things been going? I have not listened to our podcast recently, so I don't even remember where we left off necessarily.
So I've pivoted to an NFT platform.
Nice. Okay. Sorry, I insulted your life.
It's fine. It's fine. This podcast is over. So since we last spoke, I have done a grand total of zero things for Tetsu.
Gotcha. You just motivation fell off, or you just been real busy with?
No, I've been. So that other client I've been working on, I'm still kind of working on that client, just because I want to get it done before the end of this month, because I'm going on vacation. I just want to get that out of there. And actually, it's actually been really fun. It's like a Rails 6 port of like a Rails 4 app.
And I know this client, right?
Yes. I was like, oh, I'll just port everything over, you know, and just be on Rails 6 then. And then because they want like new features and a little bit of workflow changes and things like that. But as soon as I started digging into it, it has some front end interactions with using jQuery previously. So this time around, I started using Hotwire. I'm like, oh, this is Rails 6. I've seen some tweets. JavaScript sprinkles, you know, I'm going to use Hotwire. And actually I've been really like, dude, I've been really enjoying, there's something about like a Rails, brand new Rails CRUD app that like, I don't know. It kind of just makes me addicted to like work on it.
It's because weird. You can iterate so fast on
that
Rails.
Going to like say that because like once you get, you know, like example is like, there's like, I don't know, 5 list pages on this thing. And all the columns need to be sorted. So I built one like helper with some stimulus and some turbo stream stuff. And once I had one column done on one of these lists, I just was able to like through the use of modules and partials and concerns and like, nested routes and things, it's like so easy to slap these things onto like other parts of the application. And just like having that stuff fit together at the end and like seeing your speed increase, like, oh, I have to do this list. Well, okay. Last time it took me a day to do this. And now this time it takes me an hour to do it because I have all the pieces in play. And it's really so easy to kind of snap together. That's why I still love Rails, man.
Rails is really, I credit a lot of my career, like, and my learning, cut my teeth and stuff on Rails, right? Like, I spent so much time, I learned a lot of good programming practices from working on Rails apps. I saw a lot of satisfaction from just building stuff with Rails. So yeah, I love Rails. I haven't used it in years at this point, but I still do think it's such a wonderful piece of software.
Yeah, and Turbo Streams actually is really, really good, man. It's really, like, there's like this nice separation of like server side versus JavaScript. Like there's all Turbo Streams can really do is update the DOM. So if you want to replace a DOM element, you want to update a DOM element, you want to prepend or append a DOM element, that's all you can do. And it turns out that's like 90% of the JavaScript that you want to write.
Yeah, a lot of times, yeah. That's
is go fetch me, you know, something from the server. Give me some data back and replace the DOM with this data from the server. And you can just still do that with just plain old Rails and some Turbo Stream stuff. And it's like super, super nice. So it's mostly a lot of Turbo Streams responses. And it turns out all those Turbo Stream responses are on like the update of the thing. So they're on like update actions or create actions, things like that. So
nice. Yeah, I haven't even looked at any of the code for Hotwire or any of the turbo packages involved. Yeah. I can't remember all the package names.
See, that's the unfortunate thing. I think the whole like Hotwire umbrella of stuff is very confusing. You don't really kind of know how it all plugs together. Like from the outside, like when I went into it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to start using Hotwire. And then I like had to like watch that video that DHH did like 3 times. So like, really figure out what the heck is going on.
Yeah, I will say that I think the fact that Live View is one thing,
yeah,
and it just works, does make it like such. It's a way better marketing package, right? Even though there's some stuff in Hotwire that like can't be done in Live View, right? Or am I wrong about this?
They can't be done in.
Isn't there like, what are turbo frames? Those are the ones that I was unsure of.
Yeah. See, exactly. So turbo frames, all it really is just a div with a name. And that's the thing. That's your framing out. So you can basically replace that or update that or do whatever with that frame.
Oh, okay. It's a live view component. Yeah. Got it.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. So, things like that, they're just, they have like a name to it and like a quote unquote tech to it. And it's really just, if they would just say, it's just a div that has an ID to it.
Yeah. That seems like it would be like, oh, this is a Hotwire container or like, live view component is really like, this is one subsection of a thing that works on its own.
Yeah. Like the whole like Hotwire thing is not even a thing. It's just a collection of, you know, Turbo, which replaced Turbo Links.
Uh-huh.
And Stimulus, which is still their same old JavaScript library. There's nothing new to it. Maybe they might hook up some Turbo stuff behind the scenes. I'm not quite sure about that, but Stimulus is the same. And then Strata's, I haven't even looked at that, but I think that's just hooks into, you know, iOS and Android type stuff. So you can kind of do the same thing.
That's the part. That's the part that is new. I knew there was something that I'm like, I don't think Phoenix cares about this.
Yeah.
That one makes more sense. Which that one makes a lot of sense for Basecamp because they build HTML-based web apps for multi-million dollar things, right? Like, they get a lot of mileage out of that stuff.
Yeah, and I did the same sort of, we worked on an app that had a React front end, which was, or I'm sorry, this was a real iOS app. It wasn't a React. But there was like, we got to a point in the project where it's like, all right, let's not reinvent this page with iOS controls, Swift controls and crap. So we started just hooking, just showing web pages. And that hook into iOS from like being able to talk from your web app to iOS's web container thingy. Mm-hmm. I forgot what they call it. There's a way to talk in between those things. So I'm assuming Strata just hooks into that really nicely.
Gotcha.
So I've been having a lot of fun with that. But actually that project is almost over. I'm ahead of the game because I've worked on it so much. So actually today I started working on Tatsu a bit and kind of got my bearings about where I was at. And I got... the OAuth stuff working.
Nice. Did you end up writing your own custom OAuth thing since UberAuth wasn't quite working for you?
Yeah. So last time UberAuth, there was a so Slack changed their OAuth. Right now you get back kind of two tokens. You get back a bot token, a token for the bot that they OAuth, and your own token. And you want to hold on to both of those because sometimes you want to act as the bot and sometimes your bot wants to act as the user. So you want to hold on to both of those tokens. The fork turns out
just
doesn't
swap out bot for user.
You still just get the bot token. So I was like, all right, this still doesn't work. So I'm actually going to use OAuth 2. There's a package that's kind of lower level than UberAuth, which is kind of nice because I'm going to implement it in Tatsu and then move it over to Juvee. That piece is going to be a lot more easier to do than you know. I'm not going to bring UberAuth into
Juvee, no. Juvee. And I imagine OAuth too. This is one of the beautiful things about a lot of Elixir packages is that you look at them, you're like, oh, this has literally no dependencies, or it depends on Hackney, right? Which everything depends on Hackney, so it doesn't matter.
it's like Nokogiri for
exactly.
Yeah, and I think actually, I haven't verified this, but I actually think that the UberAuth package uses OAuth 2, the OAuth 2 package. So
that seems reasonable to me.
Yeah. So I'm in the process of doing that. And then the other thing I'm in the process of doing, actually I worked on right before this call, is Juvee is still sponsorware. Mm-hmm. I think I'm actually going to remove that limit, just so I can create Juvee more out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, it's still a private package.
Okay.
And so my CI is all messed up. All the rods and cones in my CI are all messed up because it can't pull down that package. So I found a GitHub action, because this is the CI is built on GitHub actions, mm-hmm. that will, you can specify multiple SSH keys and it automatically like hooks into like the GitHub, like known hosts, and does the stuff that you need to do.
Mm-hmm. For I bet I'm using hey. The same package, by the way.
Okay. It's like, it's from like Web Factory or something like that.
Okay, never mind. I'm it's not. Like but SSS. Same general concept though.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if that's going to work. I actually like right before this call, like pushed it. And then I found that is actually the previous push I did today and this push are now failing on a different reason that they weren't failing on. Haven't even touched it. Didn't update mixed dependencies. And now one of the mixed dependencies cannot be installed, something with an SSL thing problem.
Oh, fun.
Anyway, yeah. So I'm kind of like going down the rabbit hole of like, this is what happens when you leave stuff just sitting in the corner.
Yep.
It collects
yep.
dust. And so,
mm-hmm. yep. yeah. That's what so, I felt like going back to my that branch for pulling in market prices. I looked at it and go, what in the yeah. F was I doing, dude? Like, you squint a little and you can kind of see that I might have been coherent, but then you look at it real close and you're like, dude, was I drunk? I don't understand.
The good thing I do usually, like on side projects like this, where I know that it might be days in between me touching them, is I always like leave either a broken test or I'll leave, something in the pull request or issue that I'm working on to just like a checklist, like a to-do checklist of mm-hmm. things that need to happen before this is good.
Nice.
So that's always a good thing to like go back and I was like, oh, I have this checklist. And I was like, yep, still got to do that. So that was good. Good way to remember nice. What the heck I was working on. Yeah. So that's it, man. My next like part is just gonna I'm actually really excited about Gervais and Tetsu again, so
mm-hmm. that's good. I'm glad. I mean, because you were doing this other project and you're like, I'm gonna this project based on like time or whatever will be really fruitful for money wise, right? Like it has a good ROI.
I said that.
So you were gonna get more time to work on Tetsu, is it kind of what I thought, right?
Yep. But the Rails project though, this is what makes me a bad consultant.
Is you're bad at just estimating?
Well, everybody's horrible estimating, even if they admit that or not. But like, I'm just spending like way too much time on like, you know, refactoring. I'm like, oh, I can refactor this to this and make this even nicer. I'm like, yeah. I'm the only freaking developer on this freaking thing. They just want it done. I just want to do it. But there's just something in me that's like, I just can't ship something like that. So I just spend too much time on just making things right and good mm-hmm. and perfect. And so it's fun. So I don't really care about making, you know, losing money on this. I'm not losing money.
I'm
having fun. And yep. you know. So anyway.
Nice. Oh, I do have one other just random, since this is our last podcast for quite a while.
Well, we didn't say that yet.
You did. You said it was the last. Oh, I guess you said it was the last podcast before I have a kid. But
so we're going to put this, we're going to end this season four.
Mm-hmm.
With a little cliffhanger, you know, what happened with Keith and his baby.
Did Keith end up just shutting down Juniper's lab because he
yes. Did Keith throw his computer out the window because he has two kids now? Did Jamie stop looking at Twitter to finish his project? So we're going to put this on pause for, I don't know. We never really discussed when coming back.
You want to just come back in 3 months when I'm done with paternity leave?
Sure.
I mean, if that works for you, yeah. It gives us like a line in the sand to kind of know, and I'll be like back to working at that point. So I like that. I'll probably have more to talk about.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. We'll pencil it in for 3 months. And if we get the urge to come back sooner, we'll come back sooner. But mm-hmm. yeah, at least a couple months.
I'll most likely just be a host and just ask you questions, because we'll still see what it looks like. Because last time around, I had paternity leave for 10 weeks because I took a couple of extra weeks of vacation. I was like, dude, I'm going to get so much done. I didn't do anything. So yeah, that was,
yeah.
I've learned my lesson.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Yep. Cool. Three months. Yeah. And plus, like, I just want to step away because, like, between this and the masterminds group, it started making Tetsu into like a job. Like, oh, I need to have something for my mastermind group update.
Oh,
I need
gotcha.
To have something for the podcast update. And I'm like, dude, it's just going to get done when it gets done. And like, I don't want to have this extra guilt when kind of this stuff came up.
So. I can kind of feel you there. That was one of the reasons why I had to stop working on Chronic, is because there were times when I wasn't feeling motivated to work on it. And then I had to report like I did nothing on the podcast.
Yep.
And then it just like as a negative feedback cycle that progressively made me lose interest in the project.
Yep.
But okay. Cool. Do we have,
so what's your one thing? Dark? After Dark. Yeah. So thank you for all of our sponsors this season.
There you go.
Now we're going to go into the After Dark portion.
Yeah. Well, since our last one, we've got some time to talk about this, but, I don't even remember how it happened, but I built a random Vue.js progressive web application.
Title.
I don't even know how it happened, but so I was doing this thing, and one of my favorite, this, I don't know why everything comes back to games. I must play too many games is what it comes down to. But one of my favorite board games is a game called Dice Throne. And it's like a mix between Magic the Gathering and Yahtzee, and I can get my wife to play it. So that makes it pretty good.
Like Dice Throne, like Game of Thrones? Dice Throne?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that kind of throne.
Okay.
And I mean, it's a pun, obviously, on other throne. But yeah, so it's a dueling game. Like each of you has a hero, and the hero has like a little leaflet that you like roll out, and you roll dice like you would in Yahtzee, and each hero has custom dice that have different symbols on them and numbers or whatever. And then what you roll, like if you roll a large straight, it does a certain thing. Like that's an attack. You attack the other person, takes their health down. Cool. Whatever.
Yahtzee time.
This game is baller. Like I love it. It's my favorite board game.
God damn it. Now I got to have a beep in there. Yahtzee is like one of my favorite games.
Yeah. Ever. You should check out Dice Throne.
All right.
They come in dueling packs, right? Cause they're a bunch of different heroes and they have seasons, and you buy them in these, you can buy them in these boxes where it's like
kind of like this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So you can buy, these boxes that are two different heroes up against each other. Each season has four boxes. So you can have eight heroes from each thing. And a box is like $20 or whatever. And that's all you need to get started. Like I think the good one is get the Gunslinger versus the Samurai is like the good starter box, because neither of those are that complicated. There are much more complicated heroes you can play later on.
Do they have a ninja?
The ninja's baller. The ninja comes with the Treant as the other one.
I'm sorry. I keep interrupting. Let's go.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll put Dice Throne in the show notes. But it's a dueling game is how the game started. But they built a cooperative game to where you can play, as long as you have some heroes, you can be on the same team and you roll out, like you pull a card out and you set up a dungeon basically, and you have little miniatures and you go through the dungeon exploring and fighting little like minion monsters and stuff. And so I bought that expansion. And you can have like there's campaign scoring, so you get like loot cards that change the deck of cards that you have. And there's a bunch of stuff going on for it, but basically it was never designed to be able to support multiple campaigns of doing this thing, because you can't like beat the whole game in one setting, because it can take like you do like one session and there are eight sessions to beat the game and you have to succeed at all of them. So I was like, well, I want to be able to keep track of this, and I'm playing a session by myself, like just a solo campaign. And I wanted to have a campaign where Kendra could join me too. So I built dicethrone.tools. And it basically gives you the ability to tell it what heroes you own. It has a hero randomizer. So if you don't want to pick who you play, it'll just randomly generate them. You just be like, hey, I own these heroes and there are three of us playing right now. Just give us some random heroes to play. So I built a hero randomizer, and then I also built a campaign tracker, so you can track campaigns. And it has like a whole loot card shop system and understands the rules for grading an individual session and stuff like that.
Jesus.
So that explains some of the game portion of it. But I built it and I was like, I think I want to build this in Vue, and we'll try to build it as a progressive web app so that it can be like offline access. Like you don't need the internet to use it. I'm not going to have a server backend. I'm just going to use local storage to store stuff.
I'm just going to use Tailwind UI.
Well, of course, obviously, dude, I wasn't going to build out my own freaking design for this. I was like, I'm going to do this as rapidly as I can.
That's awesome, dude.
And, so yeah, I think I probably built this in like 4 or 5 hours, maybe.
Wow.
And eventually there was some stuff I added on later that took a little bit more time. Like I had to manually do the data entry for all of the cards, just so they're all there and they like show up in the JSON file so they can continue to work offline. But yeah, so I built that and it was a wonderful experience. Vue.js is freaking amazing, dude.
Yeah.
I will take Vue over React probably any day of the week, I think.
Yeah.
There's some pretty neat stuff.
Cards and letters. Cards and letters.
What?
Cards and letters to Keith for starting the front end war between our stand-up soldiers.
I'm not saying it's a war. I'm just saying I have my preference now, and I just like the way that Vue works. Like you have all of your JavaScript bits in one section of a .vue file. You have all of your markdown or like your actual HTML bits in a different section of the markdown, and or because
presentation is separate from behavior.
Yeah,
that's definitely different than React. Yeah, no, I'm being serious.
Like, the last time I messed with React, it's a lot of like you have a function that just returns a bunch of HTML.
Yeah, that's literally JSX, what. That's,
blah blah blah. That's but all. Yeah, so this is when you create a single view or a single file view component, you set up a template tag, and then you have your script tag, and you can actually have scope styles too. So you can have a style tag in there that has styles that only apply to components generated from the single file component, which is kind of cool. But yeah, it's like I went through and I built things in just like a really neat way. Also, Vue has stuff that I liked from using React is like officially maintained by Vue, right? So like React router, Vue has its own router that you can just add using the Vue CLI. You just do like Vue add router and it just like pulls in the official router implementation and sets up everything for you. Or like Vue has its own thing that is effectively Redux called Vuex or Vux, maybe. I don't know. But you can just be Vue add that and it pulls that in. And I like using that too. So, and then you have.
Sounds very Railsy. You
know? Yeah, it's sweet. I enjoy it a lot. But like, I was like, I want to set up a toast component, right? Like, how am I going to go about doing this kind of thing? Well, you don't do like, this is probably the neatest part about things. So when you're setting up stuff in your template, it works kind of like Alpine. I mean, Alpine's based on Vue and how Vue works, right? Mm-hmm. But so like in your template, you would do like vbind and you can bind to an event or whatever. And you like have it up there and you just reference like the name of a function or whatever that'll get called when this thing happens. And you can have subcomponents, right, that you write to your own custom components that go up there. And you're like, well, how do I pass it an updater function, right? Well, you don't. That's the thing is you don't pass functions in for things like a render func or whatever like that. You instead just bind to an event and you have your custom thing emit an event that does the thing. And then like the separation there is really nice because you don't have to worry about like creating closures to wrap functions that you can then pass into other components. You're just like, I'm just going to bind to this event and run this thing. And yeah,
that's sweet.
The usage of it is like so nice. And I just really enjoyed my time working with it. So it's like right now for work today, I'm actually going through and I want to build some stuff for a different like part of the content production crew. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to build these guys a really fast web app in Vue that just generates them this template file that I need them to use for some other tool that I built them. And I'm like, this is going to take me literally no time at all because I honestly sort of feel proficient in Vue already, even though I haven't been using it for that long. So I'm pretty excited about it.
That's cool, man. You spelled coffee wrong. This is cool.
Did I?
Yeah. Buy me a caveve.
Confefe. Oh, no, not the. I did. It's just one F. I did have somebody buy me a coffee, which actually kind of surprised me.
They didn't buy you a coffee, though. They bought you a caveve.
They got me a cafe. But yeah. So.
Cool, man. Nice.
Yeah.
Four hours, huh? That's cool.
Yeah, probably. That would be my guess. And there's some pretty neat stuff in here. Like if you go and create a campaign, there's a lot of little things in here where they're optional settings. So like once you beat the game, there are legacy packs in the adventures mode, which are like cards that you shouldn't open until you meet a criteria in the game, and the game will tell you to open these cards, and then that changes the game forever for you basically.
Is all this data stored locally? Like,
yeah, this is all local. Yeah, everything. Like there's no server, there's no anything. This is actually just deployed on Netlify, and yeah, that's it. So it doesn't take basically anything at all for me to do. I just push it up and it's almost instantly out. One thing I do need to add is like, so since it's a progressive web app, and you can literally do the thing where you like add it to your home screen and it doesn't have any Chrome to it. So it works mm-hmm. like it would be, you know, some sort of application on your phone. Well, I don't have it. There's no way for me right now to have a little pop-up that says like, hey, the application updated, you need to refresh the page basically. So to actually update it, if you have it like installed, you actually just have to swipe to kill the app and then click the thing again and it'll fetch a new version. But that's not like you have to know that that would work. So I want to add a little lifecycle hook in to where it can sense when there's been a change to the actual application itself, and it can just give you a little pop-up, which is like a pretty standard thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
nice.
Yeah, so that was that.
When are you gonna add your microservices to that?
I don't need them. There was somebody like who was like, I think wanted to be able to do this on multiple devices, and I was just like, nope. Like, you just, when you're managing your campaigns, you just have to use the same device, dude. Yeah, like, that's just how it is. This doesn't cost me anything to run. It's super fast. There's no privacy concerns, like nothing. So
nice.
I thought it was a really fun side project. Tailwind UI makes it nice to just build out stuff really quick, especially if I don't care if it looks like similar to something else somebody has seen somewhere.
Yeah, especially stuff that's just already responsive. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, and this like thing
really
turned out
thoughtfully.
Yeah, it's, I did run into some weird issues on something somewhere, but I got it patched up.
Got her patched up.
So,
well, cool, man. Yeah,
it's a pretty neat little side thing that I did that I thought you would get a kick out of, when I'm just like, oh yeah, by the way, I learned this new framework and I built a thing.
That's awesome.
All right, dude. Hey, well, I guess
I will. Hey, good season. Good season.
This was a good one.
Let's wrap her up.
If we accomplished anything, but it was a good one. So
we did 26 episodes of saying I didn't get as much done,
and we lost a couple in there somewhere too. There's at least a lost episode somewhere in season 4 because I forgot to edit it, and then it was like way too old.
Yeah. Well, so, I've got one in the hopper still from last month, so
nice.
I'll release that next week, and then this one in a couple weeks. So
all right. Well, cool. Cool, sounds man. Good, dude.
All right. Well, hey, best of luck, Papa, too. And
thank
you. And best of luck to Kendra. And since you don't really do anything, so cool, man. And I will talk to you next season.
Sounds good, man. Bye.
All right. Bye.